This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In studio, and one of the big, big game pitchers, not a big guy, not physically imposing, as much art and all sincerity, and this is a guy who rooted for his team, not the first team to play for, the other team, the real team, the Yankees, no disrespect to the Mets. David Cohn, who had probably as much heart and as much backbone as any pitcher I've ever seen pitch. And I mean that. And he's with us here on the show. What up, buddy? How you doing today?
That's good. I have arrived. I'm on the Tiki and Tierney show here, right? I feel like, yes, it's a coming of age here.
We have a better connection, though. You weren't at David's perfect game, were you, in 1999?
No.
Well, our producer,
I was fishing in Sheepshead Bay.
Were you?
I got off the boat, and they said, Cody's throwing a perfecto. We went to Randazzo's, had a couple of pops, got nice. Some clams, and watched Cody do his
thing.
Well,
July 18th, 1999, Mike Samter, our producer, was selling soda in the stadium. When you threw a perfect game, so he was there with you.
That's awesome.
You have a book out, and obviously we'll get to it. Full Count, The Education of a Pitcher, which I think is interesting because, as BT mentioned, you're not like that imposing 6'5", overpowering guy. But what was the secret? What was the edge for you that allowed you to be so great? I always wonder that with non-typical stars in their sport, physically typical, I should say.
You know, for me, it was about putting spin on the baseball. You know, I could drop arm angles, throw sidearm. You know, I tried to be Louis Tion. Louis Tion was a great pitcher from Cuba for the Red Sox. And in 1975, he pitched for the Red Sox in the World Series. It was a famous Carlton Fisk home run in Game 6. And I was 12 years old, and I thought that was just the coolest cat I've ever seen. I wanted to be Louis Tion. That's the way he pitched. He had a creative style. He got a lot of spin on the baseball, more deception, changing arm angles. And that was my style, really. I held that all the way through my career.
Louis Tion would actually, if I'm not mistaken, would actually turn around, almost face second base. He had this real contorted windup. Another wacky windup was Fernando. I almost see Louis Tion, who obviously was before Fernando. But the thing that you used to do, and I guess this is kind of what you're saying, is, I've seen you pitch where you wound up with great numbers, but after the game you said, I didn't have my A stuff. And you would just invent. You would just find different slots. And how many times when you left the bullpen, when you didn't have great stuff, but you wound up putting up a gem because you got creative and you tried things that maybe others weren't willing to try in a game?
Yeah, especially later in my career. You know, with the Yankee years, I was in my 30s, up to my mid to late 30s, and you start to diminish. Your skills diminish at that point. Velocity went down, and, you know, I was through fairly hard when I was with the Mets the first 6 years. I had decent stuff, but that diminished, so the creativity part really took over. And I think the light bulb went on in my head is, when I stopped worrying about how my stuff was in the bullpen before the game. You know, as a young pitcher, you're worried, boy, do I have my good fastball? am I ready today? And then by the time I was a Yankee, I'm like, it doesn't matter. I'm going to find a way to make it work. And I'm going to drop down. I'm going to create pitches. I'm going to turn it over. I'm going to subtract a little bit and, get into the craft of pitching a little more. And that was actually some of the more rewarding times of my career when you feel like, man, I didn't really have a lot today, but I found a way to get it done.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Full Count is the book, and it's an autobiography, basically. And there's a lot of stories, I'm sure, that are in there. I was telling you
keep
before.
It real, Cody?
A little too real.
I did an event with Boomer, David Wells, probably about 5 or 6 months ago, and he was telling me some of those stories. I mean, you talk about keeping it real. How real do you get in this book? What are the ones that stick out?
Well, there's a lot of mistakes I made and some of the behavior, you know, some of the temper tantrums that I threw, even as a kid. You know, my dad was my first coach, and I described playing wiffle ball in the backyard and being really a headstrong kid and throwing tantrums, and my dad would kick me out of practice. And that really hasn't changed to today. I'm still that same guy. You know, I bashed heads with pitching coaches in the Royals organization coming up through, and certainly, I take myself to task. I think this is a kind of a raw and an honest look at some of the anxieties and nervousness that pitchers go through. And there's no other position in sports, I think, quite like a starting pitcher. You pitch once a week. You get a chance to to go out there, and then your week can be ruined in five minutes. It makes you a maniac sometimes on the mound. So.
I believe it. Now, you do about half of the games with the Yankees now. And so you've seen, I guess, the evolution of the athlete that does the job that you used to do. Is it the same as it was? Are those anxieties still there? Or are kids so, I guess, seasoned, aware? They're different now. Kids are different now. Pitchers are different now. Is it different now than when you were growing up?
Well, there's a lot of differences. Yeah, it's a valid point, without a doubt. But I still feel like, you know, as a competitor, that anxiety is still there for a lot of pitchers. It still has to be. I mean, especially if you're driven to be the best and you're competing on that high of a level, as you well know. Yeah. I mean, there's certain insecurities that come about. And some of the best athletes I've ever been around are some of the most insecure ones at times.
Because you're scared, right?
And you're afraid to admit it because you're perceived as being weak.
But what are you afraid of? Just failing?
I think afraid of failure, afraid of letting your team down, not being prepared, some sort of embarrassing moment on the field. Maybe if it's a big game, the anxiety level goes up. You're afraid you're going to have that Bill Buckner moment, you know, something like that in a World Series game. And I remember feeling those feelings and wondering, well, God, I hope that's not me. I hope I don't do something like that. And it's very real, even among the best and what you would think would be the most secure athletes are sometimes the worst ones.
Got to ask you about this, and you played with them, and you want to jump around, so you don't have to spend too much time on it. But I've always said, I know you're a historian of the game, growing up Kansas City, those great Royals teams, terrific. I mean, George Brett, Larry Gora, Paul Splitorff. I mean, Edward Quisenberry, rest in peace. Willie Wilson, we could go all day with this. But Mattingly, to me, you know, before he hurt his back, that explosive, to me, he was Stan Musial. If Don Mattingly doesn't get hurt, wins the MVP in 85, wins the batting title in 84, should have won the MVP in 86. Clemens won it. I think Donnie should have. He doesn't get hurt. Where is Don Mattingly amongst the all-time greats?
He was the best pure hitter, I think, of his generation for a good stretch. You know, maybe the better part of 7, 8, 9 years where he was the guy in the American League. And as a right-handed pitcher, he was the one guy you didn't want to face. You'd pitch around him or walk him. And if you faced the Yankees in that era, you drew a circle around his name in the lineup and said, not him, not today.
And it's not like there were stiffs behind him. You had Ricky Henderson in front of him for a couple of years. You had Dave Winfield behind him. Even a guy like Pagliarulo who had some pop. So it's not like they didn't have pitching. If they had you back then, they would have had championships with Mattingly. He just didn't have the arms. They can obviously hit the heck out of the baseball back then, though. Yeah. David Cohn is with us here in studio. Coney?
Hey, Coney, you mentioned earlier about spin rate and how you used to toy with it. A couple years ago, we thought Justin Verlander might be hitting the end. Detroit felt like wash. His career was just fading. He gets traded, goes out to Houston, and his spin rate increases, or whatever the heck they did out there with him. Can you explain to us in a coherent way how he was unbelievable last night.
I'm going to give you baseball, too, if you want to hold that for
Yeah, there you go.
He had 12 strikeouts last night. He's masterful at 36 years old. It's bizarre, but it's obviously about the spin rate. Explain this to us.
Yeah, it definitely is a big part of spin rate and pitch design nowadays. And if you've ever played golf and you've been to a golf shop and got on a launch monitor and got fitted for a driver, that same technology is now in baseball, and that measures spin rate, and it measures spin efficiency and the axis of the spin. So you can actually go in the bullpen and practice, and every pitch you can look on the laptop and go, okay, how was my spin efficiency on that pitch? Let me tweak my grip.
Yeah.
Let me try to find out pitches that come out of the same plane and then deceive the hitters, because the hitters have to wait almost till a third of the way in front of home plate, like 30 feet in front of home plate. That's when they have to decide whether to swing or not. And if all your pitches come on the same plane and are designed with tight spin, they could be much more deceptive, much more effective. And I think Verlander, you know, accompanied with getting himself in shape, he had a core injury with the Tigers.
Yeah.
Kind of rededicated himself, got himself in shape, got his nutrition.
Got the pine tar.
Got his right. Yeah, no, there's no doubt. I think we used to think pine tar, and
pretty
I used
cute girlfriend too.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Cute's a bit of an undersell. Cute.
He's winning at life now. Definitely. Right. You know, we used to think pine tar would just help you in cold weather, but now we know, you know, by the measurements in this technology, that a little bit of extra sticky stuff on your fingers can increase your spin rate, especially on breaking stuff. So Verlander kind of tweaked his repertoire. went to more of a slider instead of that big overhand curve he used to throw, which was much more recognizable out of his hand. Now all of his pitches come in what they call tunneling. There's a tunneling effect. They all come in the same tunnel, and then they break right in front of home plate in different directions.
Now, just to simplify, it's a great David Cohn who's with us here in studio. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM 206. Any questions on Twitter, get us on Tiki and Tierney. We could throw a few through Coney here or by Coney. It's coming out of the same slot, right? So it's the same arm angle, same slot, and it's just extra snappage, extra torque. That's the difference? Like, that's the simple explanation?
Yeah, a combination of both. I think the best way to explain spin rate is that we've been, you know, we're so used to seeing velocity, the radar gun readings. Yeah. This guy throwing 100, 95, 90, but there's a big difference between velocity and life on the pitch.
Yep.
Spin rate is life on the pitch. And his fastball tends to jump a little bit at you, even though it might register 94 or 95. I've seen pitchers throw 99 miles an hour with less life on it than pitchers that throw 94 or 95 that the ball just seems to have a little jackrabbit in it. It just seems to jump right in front of home plate.
Yeah, you know, it's impossible to catch rabbits. I have them in my yard. It drives me insane.
Just get out the pellet gun. That'll catch them real quick.
Yeah, right. Let me switch from a pitching perspective to a hitter's perspective. Well, I guess from a pitching standpoint, but Bryce Harper, for instance, this year is hitting about 224. The modern slugger, let's call him that, it's binary, right? I'm hitting a home run or I'm striking out. Is it harder or easier to pitch to that, if that makes sense, if you understand what my question is?
I mean, the change mindset of the hitter.
Yes,
it's a great question.
Now.
You know, I was a strikeout pitcher, so certainly I would have loved to seen hitters that took big, that take big swings, and that you can maybe exploit that a little bit. You know, I did well against the Bash brothers, McGuire, Canseco with Oakland. Those big, powerful right-handed batters. That's when I drop sidearm and turn into Louis Tiant and try to trick them.
Little Laredo.
You know, you have to factor in walks too and on base percentage. I think obviously with the modern metrics and saber metrics that we. Batting average has been diminished in terms of value. And some of it's fair, some of it's right. You know, times on base matters, getting on base, having a good eye, getting good pitches to hit. And even if that means you get deeper in the counts and strike out more, then most front offices are happy with that, or they're accepting of that, as opposed to somebody who worried about himself and would swing at pitches out of the zone and try to get hits because they thought that's how you were paid, by getting more hits.
Yeah.
But nowadays, you're not so much paid for batting average.
Yeah,
when did
that flip? When did that switch?
It was a gradual process over the last 15 years to where sabermetrics and a lot of the analytics departments started to place value or give credit where credit is due. And players like Tim Raines got more credit for being on base, for working counts, for getting walks and running the bases. And nowadays, you're measured on how well you run the bases, how well you play defense, and it's called a WAR metric, wins above replacement, and what your WAR ranking is the first thing most players or most front offices look at, as opposed to what your batting average is.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because yesterday we were talking about Cody Bellinger, who's doing both. He's had 17 home runs on the year. He's hitting .405.
He runs a little bit, too.
He's 7 stolen bases. Yeah. I mean, he's on base, he walks. I mean, it's unbelievable. He's got less strikeouts than Yelich, et cetera. I mean, he's the perfect player right now, in a sense, right?
Well, he really is. He's off to that kind of a start, and he can play anywhere on the field. He could be a gold glove center fielder. They put him at first base. Mm-hmm. He can play right field. He could probably play anywhere on the field because he's that kind of an athlete. His dad was that kind of an athlete, too, even though he didn't have the skill set that his son has. But Clay Bellinger was his father, played on those Yankee teams as kind of a super utility guy. So he's had it in his blood. He's been around the game for a long time. He's been around big league clubhouses. His father's now a fireman in L.A., in the L.A. area, after his career. His dad didn't make the big money.
No.
His son's going to make the big money, though, pretty soon.
His son will take care of him.
He has 60-inch flats right in the firehouse. Coney's with us here. Great David Cohn on Tiki and Tierney. You know, one of the issues, and this is not, you know, specific to the Yankees, but all the teams who are trying to win, one of the issues that, and you know, and watching Stanton, who, as Yankee fans know, is hurt still, with the biceps and the shoulder, hopefully he's coming back soon. You know, you get to from April through September, you want to strike out. I don't love it. I mean, I'm more old school. You want to strike out 160 times, whatever, okay. Crank out 45 bombs, OPS over 850, we're fine, okay. You get to October, you got to square it up. Man on third, one out, you got to get a fly ball to the outfield. Now, I don't expect you to hit a 7-hopper to second base like your Manny Trio from 1979 or whatever, but you got to at least put the bat on the ball. And there, I feel like that, although the Yankees playing now, obviously, are making great contact, does he augment how he plays, or do you believe that he is inflexible? Because they're going to need him to make a lot more contact than he did last postseason. He was terrible.
It's a valid point, without a doubt. And I think you see, you know, in baseball and in the business world, they talk about market inefficiencies. And now the new market inefficiency is baseball is contact. And you're right. And that's why the Yankees signed a guy like DJ LeMahieu over Bryce Harper, over Manny Machado, because they're targeting specific players with certain skill sets that do make more contact, that are tougher outs, to kind of cover up for the swing and miss potential, whether it's Aaron Judge or Giancarlo Stanton. Mm-hmm. Now, with that being said, the single best thing you can do for your team is hit a home run. It's one run on the board. If your team out homers the other team, you win 70% of the time.
That's
so
interesting.
Over the long run, you're right, Giancarlo Stanton pays off. But in a big game in September and a big game in October, yeah, you need some complementary pieces. And I think that's why Cashman is starting to look for guys like DJ LeMahieu, as I mentioned before.
Can you stick around for a second?
I was going to ask you. You got a few more minutes for you? Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Nice. So we'll break now. We'll come back. I want to talk about, you know, the intersection, the old school versus the new school. You've been a proponent of analytics. You've been saying it on Yes for years before it became really mainstream. Really want to tap into what is a fertile baseball mind. The book is Full Count. The great David Cone. We'll get a timeout now. And Coney is back right here on CBS Sports Radio. Tiki and Tierney.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.